Welcome to A Day in the Why, a podcast where I talk with fascinating folks about the jobs they've held, the things they've learned, and how well those line up with their values and goals. You may just learn something, but I hope you'll at least laugh along with us as we dive into the mistakes we've made, the lessons we've learned, and the secrets behind how we got where we are today and where we're going tomorrow. Welcome to A Day in the Why, episode number 5, where we explore what our guests do for a living, their road to that role, and how it aligns with their values and goals. Welcome to the show, Tyler.
Thanks for having me.
I've followed your career since we met during a KEC, that's Knoxville Entrepreneur Center. Yep. It was a cohort class, I think, in 2015.
Yep.
MediaWorks?
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a hackathon event that I first ran into you guys. I was impressed by what you and your team had cobbled together as a VR solution space. I think that eventually turned into something called Evolver.
It did, yeah, correct.
Is that still around?
It's pseudo still around. So I basically, in order to simplify like what I was doing with Evolver versus what I was doing at Vessel Creative, just kind of said Evolver, you know, we would do maybe one project a year under that sort of DBA. And so eventually it was just kind of like, well, let's just roll that into what we're doing at Vessel, just to kind of not overcomplicate it too much. So we still do some projects in VR. They're just fewer and further between. So it's very kind of like specialized or as needed, not something that's super frequent.
But you're not going out and pushing Evolver as a complete solution and doing
No, we haven't been. I mean, there's been times where if people are specifically asking for VR specific things, you know, we do have an Evolver site that's completely focused on VR. So it's just a little more targeted. I have used that in the past, but generally, honestly, it's started to phase out. Like we just put in a proposal for a VR project, and I just did that under the Vessel umbrella.
Regardless, I appreciate you making time to share some insights with me and our listeners today about what you're doing.
Yeah, so this is the first podcast I've ever been on.
Well,
so
I hope we don't disappoint.
We're breaking the seal here. This is great, yeah.
Well, to start things off, can you give us an overview of what exactly it is you're doing these days?
So these days, I run a sort of a boutique video marketing firm that really just focuses on helping. We're all clients, so all our work is completely 100% client services right now. And so we really just want to come alongside our clients and help elevate goals and missions that they have as an organization or a business, and do that utilizing video storytelling, online media, you know, online mediums like landing pages and email campaigns and that kind of thing. But it's all sort of predicated around this idea of digital storytelling, which kind of just started with the evolution of, you know, everything we've done, everything I've done around video production and storytelling, and letting that sort of inform the rest of the process.
Okay. So when someone comes to you and says, I want you to do a video.
Yeah.
Do you take a step back and say, well, hold on, what are you actually trying to accomplish? Or do you just say, okay, what video do you need?
Right. Yeah. Well, that's great question there, because early on in freelance life, it's normally like, okay, just what do you need? What do you want? And eventually you get enough reps in that you kind of know better. You kind of realize, well, I can make a great video, but what's truly going to help the person, the client? What's truly going to help them? What's truly going to serve them the best? And chances are a video can be a piece of that most of the time. But I think it's always important to step back and say, well, why do you want a video? There's a method in process engineering called the 5 whys. It's a problem solving technique, right? That gets down, it helps you get down to what the root cause is. So it's basically asking the question why 5 times. Well, this isn't working. Well, why isn't this working? Well, the employee didn't show up on time. Well, why didn't the employee show up? So you just keep drilling that down 5 layers. And so when someone says, I want a video, it's the first question is, okay, that's awesome. Why do you want a video? You know, well, we saw our competitors and they had this really nice video that we like, and we want to do something like that. Well, it's like, we want to put it on our website. It's like, well, why? What do you want to happen? If you put it on your website, what do you want to happen? Why do you want, you know? So for me, it's trying to get at the root desire and then kind of reverse engineer that. And like I said, I think video is a very powerful means of communication, probably one of the most powerful means of communication, but it's got to be tied to some purpose and some intention. And I think, you know, I don't want to act like what we do at Vessel is the be all end all of a business or anything, but I do think that we can have a significant impact at a part of what they do, and we can help significantly further some of the goals that they have just knowing what we know. It's like we have sort of an ear to the ground with the internet and an ear to the ground with digital trends and that kind of thing. And so the more we can serve the people we work with, that's what I think has kept us in business all these years.
So on your LinkedIn profile,
yeah,
you mentioned the idea of a video funnel.
Mm-hmm. What exactly is a video funnel? And I'll preface it by saying that the picture I'm building in my mind of what a video funnel is basically just a way to use video to convince someone to do something. I don't know if that's right or not, but that's what I walked away from just having seen that term.
Right. And I think for me, it comes, hopefully I can verbalize this the proper way, but for me, a video funnel, it goes down to kind of what you said, the call to action. What are you wanting the person that watches your video to do? And then putting the building blocks in place that allow that person to do that action. If it is seeing a great polished video that makes you really interested in XYZ product or project, you want to learn more, you go to, what's the next step? Well, you might maybe click on that link, go read more about the project and who's involved and what the story is. And, you know, maybe there's another call to action. You know, the first call to action is maybe the link click. The second call to action is maybe an email form or a newsletter or even a asking you to purchase something. And so there's various steps that it takes, I think, for someone to become a customer of that organization or that company.
So it's not necessarily just a single or multiple video assets. It's not just that one point in time. Mm-hmm. You're talking about really a structure and a process that sits on top of that video.
Yeah, that's the goal, is to have some layer of a foundation framework that you then put video and, you know, the pretty flashy things, you put that on top of it. But underneath it is a foundation to say, oh, this is how we're actually going to help nurture and guide people to learn about who you are. You know, for a lot of us, you're not, a lot of us don't necessarily like something being shoved down our throat and being like overly sold to. So this is a way of telling, using storytelling and not just using it in a one-stop, oh, here's this one video, one size fits all, like it's got to do everything. But there's sort of a layered approach. So there can be smaller videos, there can be longer videos, longer form videos, and as well letting the copy and the things that are written on the websites or landing pages or the emails, letting that also help inform the storytelling aspect. And then you've also got the video on top of that. So it's just this like 1-2 punch, that the goal is that they kind of really work together to communicate really the heart of the people we work with.
Do you then do, I guess, a lot of writing comes out of your pool then? A lot of content strategy and writing?
Content strategy for sure, yeah. Writing I think is, you know, I would never have deemed myself as a writer, but through the reps that we've had and the experiences we've had, I've done quite a bit of that. And I think it's just, I tap into a piece of my brain that I don't typically hang my hat on, but when I can lock into that.
In the context of your strength. And,
exactly. Your area for of strength. Sure. And knowing the story, starting with strategy and really doing the best that we can to empathize with the person we're working with and truly understand, you know, what they're about and who they're trying to talk to, like who their audience is. The more and closer we get to that, the more some of that writing stuff and even the video concepts and just it informs everything you do. It's sort of this filter that everything sifts through. And so the more you can attach yourself to who they are, I think that the easier it all comes. But I certainly work with other writers as well, because there's a ton of value, in my opinion, in collaboration and letting people do what they do, like letting them do what they're best at and their strengths. And so I try to leverage other talented writers when I can. Generally, maybe I will think of the concepts or have an overall like creative direction that I try to guide, project manage, whatever you want to call it. But I definitely like to collaborate with a team.
It's always better to let someone, you know, that's professional at a certain task do their thing, right?
Yeah.
So I've heard of Vessel just over the last several years, but mm-hmm. I'm not really familiar with how big you are, you know, who your clients are, how you tend to get your business. Is there anything you could share around those points?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like I Vessel has grown, especially in this year. But I mean, we have 3 people in our office, and then like I said, I have a writer in Boston that I work with. Just the idea of this, you know, remote work and just the ability to work with people around the United States, around the world. That's been really great to have specialists that are really great in what they do. But I don't necessarily need a full time person. So we have kind of a bullpen of what I would call it, a bullpen of just creatives that I trust and believe in that I love to work with when I have the chance. In terms of our clients, what really where Vessel is headed right now is helping the world of education. And so one of the beautiful things about that is I think that we value education, like just in my own personal experience and that kind of thing, but then also the clients that we've worked with in the education realms, whether it's a school or a company that wants to educate their own clients or their employees, helping them do that, they value storytelling. And so it's been a great fit, I think, for us to work with people in that world that have students or have admissions applications or seeking applications. Like, we can leverage storytelling to really communicate the things that they want to communicate. It's been a really good fit for us, and I see Vessel moving even more into that years to come.
Well, since you've spent a lot of time thinking about education, I'm going to ask you what your thoughts are on the decentralization of education, just like DeFi or anything, right? So now, more often than not, you don't actually have to be physically present in a lot of classroom situations.
It's very true.
What do you think the value of higher education is now compared to what it used to be? Where do you think that's going?
Yeah, well, I've always said, like, there came a point in my life, rewind a little bit, in college, I was a industrial engineer major. A lot of calculus, a lot of math, a lot of physics, things that, you know, I don't run into calculus 3 in my everyday life. I don't run into differential equations in my everyday life. But what I think that type of schooling did is it teaches you, it's just like working out a muscle. It teaches your brain in these reps that you get to consume difficult information or challenging information and try to make sense of it. Or even memorize, right? Some of us are just, we're good at test taking because we can just memorize it. We're not actually learning it. But your brain is learning to do that kind of thing. And you're learning in college in general. I think there's this whole social aspect that you're learning as well. Because I kind of feel like college is this social experiment where it's like, let's take 18-year-olds that have never had really much independence outside of living with their parents at all. Let's put them in a 2-mile by 2-mile lot on campus. Let's shove them into these tiny rooms, make them live together, give a lot of potentially negative influences like alcohol and some other things, like run amok. And let's give them a bunch of classes and make them do everything on their own.
Allow them to make a lot of their own choices.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of, and at that younger age like that, it can be a real kind of challenging time and kind of finding out a little more about yourself. And so I think there's some value. I do think there's some life. I don't know, it's kind of intangible a little bit, but I think there's things that we can, if we can come out the other side of that in a healthy way, I think there's value in that. And there's value in like the process of learning and the value of the process of maturing. At the same time, I also realize that a lot of the stuff that you're actually learning, the actual content, is not necessarily going to be useful to you in 10 years. Some of it is. Like for certainly the problem-solving stuff that I learned in college sort of inform, in a way, a lot of what I do now. Because at the end of the day, if you're any sort of business owner, you're essentially, to some degree, in the business of problem-solving. And the better you can problem-solve, or the more challenging problems you can solve, the more value you can bring to the market. So there's a layer of that I carry with me, but I think it's not really about the work. It's not really about the topic that you're learning in school. It's more about the process of learning and training your brain how to learn.
Learning how to learn.
Yeah.
Is it, for me, if you were to distill that idea of higher education, that's really what it's all about.
Now, I think COVID had definitely forced the education world into this virtual learning environment. So I don't think they've cracked that nut yet on like, how to do that well. I think we as entrepreneurs probably have come across certain online courses or certain things that we felt like were done well. And what I think, like, I've learned a lot from the internet. Most of what I feel like I attribute a lot of my skills in video and in marketing in general, I attribute a lot of that to Google and YouTube. There's just, you know, anything you want to learn is there. You just have to know the right places to find it. And so online learning, virtual learning has been huge for me. Just on my own, not in sort of formalized way, but I think for programs, and I don't know that these higher education, like the universities, will ever necessarily be like this, but you know, for the programs that can really get virtual learning, you know, mapped out well in a structured course, I think that what that does then is allow whatever staff or faculty to put more time into the actual one-on-one engagement of the student and critiquing actual case studies or giving them actual real world projects, and the conceptual basics or the overall textbook stuff.
The curriculum.
Yeah, great. Yeah, perfect. That is already there, and you're not putting in manual labor to do that. So your manual labor then is used in a more impactful way, I feel like. I see a ton of potential in that. but I just don't know. I only know what I know, right? But I just feel like just from the decades and decades of doing education the way we have, we're not going to be there yet. Like, it's going to be a little bit of a journey.
Improvements can be made.
100%. But the potential's there, and I think just leveraging technology, that leveraging automation, leveraging everything that's available to us frees up your time.
How do you guys go about getting new clients? Mm-hmm. Because you're essentially a marketing company yourself.
Yeah.
So go Meta. How do we do it?
Well, it's like the cobbler's kids with no shoes kind of thing. We haven't done a lot of self promotion. One of the there's all these things that I want to do, right? And I'm putting some things in motion now to do some of that stuff. But also, where we're at right now, we don't need a lot of clients. We take on a handful of clients at a time so that we can develop ongoing relationships with those clients, lock in with them, really help to build something. It kind of goes back to your initial thing of like, well, we just want a video, or we want to solve a problem.
You want to maintain that quality versus quantity.
Just wanting a video, it's like you build the video, and then it's like, okay, here's your video, have a nice life. Like, that's not what we want. We want to be able to really deploy kind of what we know and the potential of what we know, and really help give everything that we work on a chance for success for them and for us, right? Because it builds a layer of repeatability for us and really getting to know the client and that kind of thing. So we're only doing a handful at a time, and when other stuff come down the pipeline, like, it lets us grow a little bit, kind of steady, slower growth. For me, it's more about doing consistent, impactful work, really. And so really the way a lot of our businesses come through really has been very relational, and I think that's just the way kind of we approach things. But there's also within that, like, I think a lot of times people think it's either or, like, you either have to be really promotional, digital content, that kind of thing, or you have to be really one-on-one, face-to-face, like coffee meeting, word of mouth, that kind of thing. And I think that the content and sort of promotion stuff can really aid and inform to enhance the personal relationship. And so that's really where I would like to see Vessel go. Is, I think we're always going to be some level of word of mouth. We're not going to be super heavily promotional or anything like that, but I do see us deploying a lot of valuable information within our own little context, so that when someone does reach out to us, right now a lot of what I do and the way I engage with somebody that's interested is just, it's very manual. It's very like, hey, let's pick up the phone, let's have a chat, and that's great. But I think there's a lot of things that I also want to add to that process, because again, I'm only one person.
So it doesn't scale well.
It doesn't scale, and to some degree, I'm okay with that. Like, I'm not looking at Vessel at, hey, this needs to be something huge. The agency life, I think, inherently is sort of this like relatively unscalable model focused on original ideas and people that can scale, right? But it's not as straightforward as if we were developing a software, some sort of SaaS or something like that. And so, that's a challenge, and it's one of those that I not wrestle with, but it's one of those that I think about, is just how to do that well. How to, if we're to grow a little bit, how to do it well, how to do it wisely, especially as the business owner. The last thing I want to do is hire some people and commit to them, hey, you're going to come on board with us, and then stuff hits the fan and you're like, well, I've got to
make sure you've got the runway for
you want to make sure you have the runway. Yeah, I tend to approach things relatively conservatively, but it's all with the means of, like, I don't want to get in over my head. I want to stay the people that do work with us and the clients that do work with us. I want to make sure that we have the bandwidth and the capacity to handle everything we do. So I'm just more about that healthy sort of balance as best I can, right? You kind of, if you're also ambitious, you also want to grow, but I think I'm not trying to rush it, if that makes sense.
What is your favorite element of this phase of your career?
It's a good question. I love the bookends of the process. So I love the beginning stages. I love the everything from, I mean, there's part of me now that gets really, I used to hate the idea of sales or the idea of, like, just the process you have to do to actually get to a check in the mail, But lately I feel like I've really enjoyed it, because just that's what the whole business is predicated on, right? If you're not bringing in any business, you're not going to be in business very long. And so I've gotten a lot more excited about that. And then moving that into the strategy piece, which has always been sort of the heart of where I wanted Vessel to be anyways, was the strategy. I think a lot of that stems back to my process engineering days and being in that type of role, and also working with other consultants that were engineers that did similar things, just more in the manufacturing realm, right? It wasn't digital content. And so taking some of what I knew there and deploying it into the digital content realm has always been a goal and is still to this day some of my favorite parts about the client work. And then I also love, you know, there's something magical that happens when all those strategy and that content, those ideas, that puzzle piece gets fit together toward, at the end, or even, you know, the last, call it the last third of the projects where you're really starting to assemble things.
You can start seeing the picture.
Yeah, right. It's like all these things that you or the client kind of envisioned, team worked on, collaborated on, and now it's like this actual digital content baby or framework, you know, sales funnel, and it gets deployed. I think that's there's a level of relief there, like, oh, we did it, we saw it through. But it's also, I think, kind of remarkable sometimes to see how it all plays together.
Is there anything that if you had your druthers, you could pull out of the process?
It's hard.
The stuff between the bookends?
I mean, like, you know, sitting at a computer for hours at a time, pushing pixels around, is not always my favorite thing to do. But there's some magic that happens in that process sometimes. It's pretty neat. It's stuff that, like, if you're editing a video, you're editing a story, like, certain things just cut together in ways that it's more the artistry part that comes in, right? Like, I tend to live, as a business owner, I tend to live in this, I feel like I, these days especially, live more in the marketing realm or the business, you know, focusing on ROI, focusing on the numbers, like all these
things.
The
business strategy.
Yeah, but where it all started for me was in the creative, right? In the kind of the artistry of it. And so sometimes I never want to forget that. Like, I do need to remove myself from that sometimes, but especially as we grow and as we become more of a team. But it's always good for me to have a chance to dive back into some of that. A lot of times I'm like, well, it might not be my favorite thing in the world, but that's really where the magic happens. And then there's like just some things, some practical things around when you're planning a production, like securing release forms and doing some paperwork and all that. Like, again, not the favorite thing in the world. I've done it. I've also hired people to help me do it, you know? So it's just one of those things that it's just part of it. You know, work's work, no matter how much you love it, how much you're passionate about it. There's value in work. And I think work to some degree is always going to be challenging and difficult.
If we're all fun all the time, it wouldn't be called work.
Yeah. And that, it doesn't mean you avoid it, right? But I think you press into it. And even when I don't like, even when I may be a little bit like, oh, I'm not really feeling whatever task is at hand, I think that ultimately it's still like, still a good day, you know what I mean?
Well, you're still getting to do what you like to do, right? Yeah. It just, there are elements of it that aren't quite as shiny.
Totally. And where I'm at in life now with the family and young kids and everything, it's like, that's my priority. Great. It's great. I'm so grateful that I get to do something that I'm passionate about that I love. But at the end of the day, if I needed to go clean out porta potties to pay the bills and feed my family, I'm going to go clean out porta potties. You know, I've started to put a little less stock, I think, in my business, if that makes sense.
Well, your business isn't your only baby anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So it's just, you know, life evolves a little bit in that way, but it's given me, a good perspective on things.
Well, thanks for sharing all that. I've never really had a close conversation with someone who started their own agency, essentially. Mm. So I was quite curious. So now we've got an idea of what you're doing now. I'd like to take a step back and figure out how you got there.
Me too.
So what would you say are the most influential stepping stones in your life that puts you on this path? And that could be maybe influence of family or friends or that first job you had or, you know, life experiences.
Yeah, that's interesting. So when it comes to visual, I would call it visual storytelling, creating videos, really being kind of enthralled by stories and media and entertainment and all of that. I think a lot of that is just how I was built. Like, it's in my DNA, because as early as I can remember, that's what I gravitated towards. And normally what that does is it leads you to say, oh, I want to go to Hollywood when I'm old enough. I want to be a film director. I want to be a whatever it is, right? And so that was me at a younger age. Wanted to be an actor, just anything I could do to get kind of in the biz, right? Like, that's what I wanted to do. I don't know. So that element of me has always been something that I gravitated towards. I felt like I just, to some degree, have an instinct for it. Like, I just understand some of it. Sometimes I see, in real life, I see as if it was like a movie scene, like how it would edit together in my mind as things are happening. And so that's just always kind of been part of it. And then...
Always composing.
Always composing. Always having sort of a tact for watch, you know, being a... you know, watching a movie or consuming any sort of story or video, just having a way to make sense of how it's done or how I would do it. Or, you know, I was the kid growing up that like I loved watching movies, but even more so, I loved watching the behind the scenes of the movie. Even like kids movies like Ninja Turtles, like when they had the 90s live action films, like they had a behind the scenes tape, VHS at the time. And, you know, I wore that thing out. And, you know, even when it comes to sports, like I loved watching Michael Jordan play, right? But what I loved even more were the VHS tapes that talked about kind of the life of Jordan.
His rituals,
and just, you know, some of it was like at that time was just like, it's a puff piece for Michael Jordan, right? But I love that stuff. Like, I love the process. And so I think that's always just going to be a part of me, like, regardless. It's just how I was made. And then I think getting into engineering taught me this whole other analytical side of things that I always kind of had a knack for numbers and patterns and things like that, and picked up on that. So I think that just helped me tap into a different part. I always hung my hat on this, like, oh, I'm this creative guy, but, you know, doing the engineering thing, man, like, no, actually, like, there's this methodical problem solving analytical side that I feel like now informs where my life is now. And it's kind of been, I think, over the years, I've also seen where those two camps, especially with the internet, you know, growing up in the seeing the digital age come about and the mobile generation, all these things, like, now all of a sudden, all this creative stuff, because of the internet, is also connected to data and to numbers. And so it's been a very interesting time to live through, but then also I think it just kind of gels with kind of who I am a little bit. So that's, I'm still figuring that out. It's been cool. I think we're in a very interesting time, and I think I'm positioned well to explore within that, right?
So you mentioned the analytical side, the engineering side really having proven valuable to you. If you had gone to school for something creative, so I guess the sub question is, why didn't you go to school for something creative? If you had this lifelong creative pursuit, what led you to make that decision? So that's one question. And the other is, if you had done that, if you had followed the creative route through school, do you think you'd be where you are now?
I would probably be doing something similar. I mean, the goal was always to get to the creative industry. I did some projects in college through engineering in the manufacturing. A lot of industrial engineers work in manufacturing. Some of them also work for like Disney World, which is cool. Like, I was like, the fact that you could kind of take industrial engineering and go to almost any industry was really interesting to me. You know, it's all about efficiency and process. And so it's like, well, what business doesn't want to be more efficient? At the same time, manufacturing is just a huge industry for them. But I was always like, well, I'm just never, like, there's not a snowball's chance in hell that I'm ever going to work in manufacturing. It's just not going to happen. It's not what I wanted to do. Well, I think, like, life has a funny way of working out sometimes. And I ended up working in manufacturing for 8 years. So it wasn't just like a stint, right? I was there for 8 years, but it was like the best situation. And so, I don't know. It's just like, even though that was the best situation, I still always saw myself getting over to be able to do some more like creative arts type work. I just had to figure out how to do it. And at that point, I was so deep into it that it was like, there's no direct path. There's no direct path from going to work for a coffee manufacturing company to going over to a marketing agency, or going over to a creative agency, or an ad agency, or whatever, a video production company. So I just started doing stuff on my own, because I made the phone calls, right? Like, I wasn't lazy about it. Like, I called companies in town, like, about internships, tried to build my resume up as much as I could. But this was also, like, to everyone's defense, like, this was also, like, right after the 2008 recession. So it's like, nobody in the creative agency realm was really doing, you know, they were all just trying to survive as well.
Not necessarily looking at headcount.
Yeah, right. So the opportunities really weren't there. But I did, I mean, I interviewed for some major networks and things like that, and had some opportunities. But as I started doing things on my own, it kind of, I had a little bit of a chip on my shoulder, because I was like, I felt like I was good enough, if not better, than a lot of what I was seeing from people that were in the industry, mm-hmm. right? So a little bit of a chip on my shoulder of like, I can do that. Right? Like, can I do that? I can do that.
I can do that. Why won't they let me do that?
Yeah. So I just started making stuff, and I started entering stuff into film competitions, winning film competitions. But through that process, again, it goes back to the relational aspect, just how important the relationships are, because it was through putting myself out there, you know, people just started to take notice. And so Whether that was someone wanting to hire you to, hey, I've got this, can you help me with a video? Like, I've got, you know, this kind of, this, that, and the other thing. Or people in the industry, like, all of a sudden I was getting meetings at the companies that I wanted to work for previously, sitting down with the, you know, the director of operations there and that kind of thing. And it just, it opened up some doors. But I think by that time I gained enough confidence in what I was doing as a, on the side, as a side hustle, that I was like, I started to feel like the real possibility that I could, to some degree, I could sort of build something, and not have to work for, another company, and be a little more, kind of in control of my own destiny kind of thing. And again, it's just starting to see the two worlds of creativity and data aligning up. I've just tried to press into that as much as I can. I was like, I'm kind of glad that I'm building a business in Knoxville, Tennessee, and not LA.
Yeah.
You know?
Especially now, right? I mean,
well, there's always two when you're out in LA, there's always two questions when you're talking to an aspiring filmmaker or creative person. It's kind of like you're asking about like work, right? So it's like, "Oh, do you have some gigs? Like, are you working?" And they're like, "Yeah." And then they're like, second question is it paying? Because there's just so much, you know, it's can be difficult out there. And you know, you really got to kind of, anywhere you've got to pay your dues, but it just in, out there in particular, I feel like it's a little, just a different style of life and a harder kind of to break in.
Well, there's so many people looking to break in, and for the longest time, yeah. It has been a very centralized door in, yeah. Right? Now, it's becoming, again, decentralization, right?
Yeah.
The door into entertainment, into media, mm-hmm. is becoming decentralized in and of itself. I mean, Knoxville has always been an eerily strong place for media companies, right?
Because
of Whittle back in the day. Mm-hmm. And then when that imploded, all the people that had come here to staff that decided they were going to stay because Knoxville's awesome. And so now there's all these media companies here that you wouldn't expect from a landlocked city in the South like Knoxville.
Right. Yeah. And then some of my favorite, you know, people that I follow online and entertainers or you know, business gurus or whatever you want to call them. Like, it's not like they're not all in major cities.
No.
You know,
it's a like, lot of them are have left California.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And it's like, I first person that comes to mind is like John Green, the author, Fault in Our Stars, Hero of the Fault in Our Stars.
Oh, yeah.
He's also, him and his brother, it might be Hank Green, I can't remember, but him and his brother are both big on social media, and they're funny guys, and they're entertaining, but I think they're like in Iowa somewhere, or something like that, you know, or Oklahoma. It's like, you really can do what you do from almost anywhere now, and so that's...
And there's got to be, you know, multiple effects from that, right? Let's say I live in Iowa instead of L.A., I'm probably less likely to get into trouble. Less likely to be influenced.
Sure.
Less likely to get hit by a Hummer.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, you know, it's pros and cons with everything, right? You know, you're maybe not as close as proximity, especially the networking aspect of things. But, you know, what's going to happen is going to happen. So I think just kind of my philosophy is just kind of to just do what I do the best that I know how or the best that I can, and kind of allow things to work out how they might.
So I want to switch gears a little bit,
yeah,
and talk about values and goals. And in real life, we don't often stop and examine our goals and think, you know, specifically about our values, but it's helpful to do that once in a while. Whenever I do that, it seems like mine may have changed over time because of life experiences. And I'm curious to how you have found that your goals and values have changed over time and how those align with what you're doing. Could you sum up the values that you hold most dear, and you can be as general, as specific as you're comfortable with?
Yeah, no, I would love to. I feel like I have generally four key buckets that this is more of a recent thing for me as well, taking kind of inventory of life in general. Kind of the four main buckets are like the creative bucket, the family bucket, the community bucket, and the fun bucket. And so those are kind of, you know, the general things that I try to make sure that, you know, one with the creative aspect, just because I feel like that's a natural bent that I have, I feel like I'm more of who I was intended to be when I have some level of that. And so I'm a better husband and father and general person, or I feel more like myself when I can have that outlet. So even like, again, if I'm cleaning out porta potties, I'll do that for work. That's fine. I still need to find a way to be creative in life. Family, I mentioned that. To me, that kind of goes without saying. Like, that really is at the... There's kind of faith at the top for me. And then right underneath that is family. you know, faith is kind of, I didn't even mention that. That is, but partly because that's, faith is kind of overarching over all that, right? In my perspective on life. And so, but within that umbrella, it's like there is this idea of creativity, family, community, and that being just people that surround us, the people that I'm surrounding myself with, as well as just the community of Knoxville, like the city, like how the city is growing, what are the needs of some of the communities? And then the final piece being fun is like, you know, I don't want to ever take myself too seriously. I don't want to be so much about work and about the hustle that I forget to just enjoy the day or mm-hmm. enjoy life or enjoy time with my kids. So I put that in there just for me personally, because as somebody that's fairly ambitious, it's easy to lose sight of that sometimes. Like, it's easy to just, I like to work. It's easy for me to just crank. Like, I can go and it's fun. It's somewhat enjoyable for me. And
16 hours later, you look up from the screen, right?
Yeah, I like to hustle a little bit. And sometimes I feel a little bit guilty when I don't, because it's like, I know I could be doing a little bit more. But that's when I'm reminded of this, you know, the values, right? It's like, I truly do value experiences and enjoying, just having joy. Everything doesn't, you know, you can have joy even in times of sadness in a weird way. But I think it's just important, especially now as a father, that I'm leading with a sense of joy and a sense of having fun in life. So I would generally say those are my four main ones. Just with, like, you know, the idea that, kind of with the idea of faith at the top of that, like, the idea that every single person, in my perspective, every single person, regardless of who you are, is made in the image of God, and like we're all inherently valuable in that way. And realizing that my time on this earth and my time that I have in this life is not just about me. It's about something much bigger than me. And so that keeps you very sort of humbled and focused on just like sort of the impact around you, and focused on like trying the best you can to see how to have positive impact and for good.
So given that those are your values, do you have any specific, and go back to the idea of impact maybe, mm-hmm. what specific goals do you have that align with those values?
Yeah, the first one that comes to mind, just the idea of, you know, I think I mentioned earlier that, like, this is relatively newer to me, but I mentioned the idea earlier that, you know, I'm not holding my business as like the be all end all of everything, right? Like it's really just, I want to prioritize my family and being the husband and father that I want to be to my kids. And also realizing that, again, none of this stuff is really my own anyways, but it's just something that I feel like I've been blessed with, entrusted with, I think is a good word.
So kind of the idea of stewardship.
Yeah, the idea of stewardship. And just, you know, really there's, when I think of a vessel, I would like it, you know, I would love for this to be a career that I do for the rest of my life. I also want to get the business to a place that gives me a level of freedom, both financially, freedom to provide for my family, freedom to save for the future, freedom to be generous, charitable, more generous and charitable, you know, you know, the money flows in or whatever. But I had this sort of idea of eventually reaching a level of financial independence. Also building in enough process, and this is where the engineer part of my brain kicks in that I get really excited about, but I know it's going to be quite the journey to get there. But I want to build in some process within the business that allows me to have probably a couple of days of the week, of the work week, flexible or open. So it's really a 3-day work week, but I'm using those other 2 days to continue to work on side hustles or other projects, or also time with family.
Time with family, or just feeding your brain, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, that's a real thing. You know, being able to take some solitude time away from things is sometimes where the magic happens, right? It's where you can get out of the weeds and really think kind of long-term. You know, again, to what you're doing here, like what I'm building really aligning with the values that I have? And so, you know, I have this passion now, especially as a business owner, of like just healthy personal finance, and being a numbers guy too. It's like there's just things they don't teach you in school, or even as an adult sometimes, about smart, wise decisions of your budgets and your money,
like high level prudence.
Yeah,
is that a good idea? I don't know.
And it's hard. It's a journey, right? Like it doesn't. There's no get rich quick schemes here. It's an organized sort of discipline that, again, needs to align with your values, like what you care about, right? But the idea is that it's sort of a slow go at first as you start to save and as you start to do this thing. But eventually you can reach some level, I would say, with relative, it's all relative, but I would say generally most people can get to a place, if they start early enough, can get to a place and they're consistent where they have some level of financial independence, meaning they're not necessarily having to work a job, but they can pay for their basic expenses purely based on the amount that they've saved and invested, kind of like generally like saving for retirement or an early retirement or whatever it is. But it's just something that I found, one, I found fascinating, two, I found very helpful for myself. You know, I'm about 12 years into that journey now. So it's been over a decade and I've started to see some of the benefits of being consistent. Right. But then also three, I think it's so important because I don't think it's well taught in education, just like during like grade school and that kind of thing. And then now we live in especially in this last year with like the stimulus money that's come out and all these kind of things, like that's great for some, you know, some people, like it's very helpful. Right. But it's a short term band-aid unless you really know how to manage it.
Well, just the idea of investing at a very high level, whether that's investing money, maybe you're doing dollar cost averaging, etc. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, kind of scaling that back, or stepping back from that, how you're investing your time. And that's the big thing that I wish I had learned much earlier in life, is ways to productively invest time so that it will continue to pay dividends for the rest of my life. So I think that's something that they could do a much better job at in grade school, high school.
It could change lives, right? It could change communities, especially like lower income parts of the community or economically impoverished places. Like to teach them personal finances at any scale could really have a snowball effect.
Well, it's a vicious cycle, right? Because underprivileged, undernourished, etc. communities stay that way because they don't learn the things that those of us that grew up with meals on the table, for example, had the benefit of not having to worry about where that meal's coming from so we could do other things. Whether or not we did anything productive with that time, you know. So I think we've covered kind of the values and goals section pretty well. I want to pin you down to a few ideas around how you're getting all this stuff done. So
okay.
Are there any kind of tips or tricks or rituals, habits that you feel have really influenced your success in work and life and remaining aligned with those values?
Yeah. A couple of things come to mind, I think, when you say that. One, just the relational aspect of things. I think, you know, again, the way we've operated as a business and how we try to do business and interact with other people, there's just a level of overall respect, I think, that I want to have, that I try to have with anybody. There's very few, if any, people I think you would talk with that would be like, oh, Tyler, like, I just hate that guy.
He's a jerk.
But sometimes I'm like, well, am I really doing enough? If I'm not ruffling enough feathers, am I really doing enough? But I think I really just value, again, it kind of goes back to just valuing people and wanting to treat everybody with a level of respect. And I do think, you know, there is an element of that where it's like, well, people can do things to dishonor that, right? Or they could do shady tactics and that kind of thing. And maybe they don't really earn the respect at that point. But initially, it's kind of like, I want to value people. Everyone kind of has their own stories in life and their own challenges in life, which is why I think this is super interesting that you're doing this and just having chats like this with people, because I think if I've learned anything over 34 years of life, it's like no matter who you are, no matter how marketplace successful you are, how great you've got things figured out, the human psyche and just human beings, we're just fragile people. We're all kind of shaped by our experiences, and I just think that, you know, being able to empathize in that way with another person is meaningful, and it goes outside of just business networking or whatever. Just we're all people, and we've got this one life we're all living, and we're trying to do the best that we can with it, and trying to figure things out. And so that's very interesting to me, fascinating. And then from a practical standpoint, there's an element that I've been using with my to-do list that I really enjoy, and it's called the Einstein Matrix. Are you familiar with that?
Einstein Matrix?
Einstein Matrix. Eisenhower Matrix. I butchered that. It's called the Eisenhower Matrix.
Still not familiar with it.
Yeah, so it's basically like if you could take your to-do list, write all the things down that you have to get done for that week or that month or day or whatever it is, whatever period of time, and then you separate those into four quadrants. Stuff that you need to do now, what are the immediate sort of, are there some fires you need to put out? What are the things that just have to get done like today? So that's one quadrant. The other quadrant is, what things do you need to just schedule? What things can I see out far enough where I'm like, I need to get that on the schedule. I need to get Rich's podcast on the schedule. Those are things that can start to map out your time a little bit better. Like, to your point, you said your time. Where's your time best used at? The third quadrant is delegate. What are things that I can get help with? What are things on that list that I can offload to somebody or ask for help? I think we can all have problems sometimes asking for help because we feel like we can do it all. But I think more than ever now, it's important for me to find help where I can. And then the final bucket is my favorite. It's like, what are the things you just don't need to do? What are the things on that list that might feel important, but like they're really they're really not contributing to anything.
Maybe it used to be important, or maybe it just sounded good at the time, but you've potentially committed your precious, you know, lifetime to doing something that on inspection, introspection, doesn't seem as important as it did.
Right. And so I try to do that definitely for tasks that I have as at the office, but you can also do it and kind of use that method for things at home. And I would suggest like keeping those separate, because if you try to do them together, it's just one kind of convoluted list of like, it's too much kind of maybe confusion there. But if you have one that's like, you know, outside of work, just kind of life stuff, mow the yard, whatever it is as your task, and you put those in those buckets, and then you've got a work list as well. And so I do it two different ways right now. I use an app. I think it's just Eisenhower.matrix. I'll have to find the link. I can send it to you.
But it just we'll put that information in the show notes.
It just puts you on a website that I can pull up and log in at any point. It's got my to-do list there. And then I also have I designed a screensaver for my desktop that is the Einstein matrix. And then it just says on the side, it says get shit done. And then I've got the Eisenhower matrix. And then I just do the little sticky notes on the Windows desktop, and I put the sticky notes in the categories.
Real sticky notes.
right. Stick them to the screen. Yeah, for sure. But in a practical, just that I think applies to anyone, anywhere. And I think it, to a certain degree, will be helpful for almost anyone.
Well, we're almost out of time, but I did want to ask you this, because unlike some of our guests, you actually haven't shed too much light on this accidentally. What would you want to tell me about hobbies? So obviously the creative sphere consumes a lot of your time, but do you have any particular hobbies that you've picked up over time, whether or not those are tied to the creative aspect?
Yeah, definitely. I tend to like things that are really difficult. So I've taken up golf the past 4 years, three and a half years. It is one of the hardest things that I've ever tried to get better at. And I love it. I kind of love it for that, because it's like, it's a never ending process. There's so many, I even wrote some social posts on this, just on the correlation between the golf mindset and sort of the business mindset and the creative mindset. There's a lot of things that I feel like I draw from the process of trying to get better at golf. And I tell myself that it also applies to this whole world of running a, you know, being a creative and trying to run a business. And part of that's just to justify the idea that it's worth it for me to go out and play golf. But I've really enjoyed it. I've connected with new friends that way. There's a lot of great things about that game.
I was just talking to somebody today, a coworker, about the connection between thinking, right? So just the mental activity that goes on in your brain, how that's actually not just in your brain, right? It's really your whole body that helps you with thinking. Mm-hmm. And so if you go out and you're doing physical activity, often that can spur your mind to go in different directions or to think more deeply about something, or to unfetter itself from all the daily nags and interruptions. Mm-hmm. So maybe when you're out there on the links, you're actually able to think more clearly or differently than you are when you're in front of the screen or in front of the lens.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. I'd like to think so. There's so much about, I think, once you really start to learn that game, that's counterintuitive to what you think is going to be helpful at getting you better, or helpful at lowering your scores, or whatever it is. It's not your first kind of natural instinct, and so it requires some patience, but it also requires you to kind of reverse engineer things. And so I think a lot of that applies. I can see where I'm at now in that hobby. I can just totally see why, you know, there's programs like the First Tee that teach kids the game and like teach them correlating life skills along with that, because there's a lot to be learned from that process.
And so the lessons behind the lesson.
Yeah, no, yeah. It can go much deeper than just like, hey, I want to hit this ball straighter, or I want to hit a draw, or whatever it is. There's a lot, I think, that can correlate. And maybe that gets kind of like meta, where, or just, you know, in depth, where it's like, well, you really, some days you really just want to go enjoy a game of golf, not think too hard about it. But if you do, there is some cool like insights there. So that's just been something I've really kind of become mildly obsessed with. You know, any chance I get, I try to.
How often do you play?
Right now that it's summer, I try to get out at least once a week. Not necessarily. I mean, my one complaint about golf is that it's too long of a game. So it takes 4 to 5 hours to play 18 holes, especially if you're playing with four people. It depends on how slow they play, right? So I'm always like trying to get through the round in enough time. But or maybe I just play 9 or something like that. But Knoxville is a cool place. You know, we've got places like the Williams Creek Golf Course. It's a par three. It's a nice par three. It's got everything you need to kind of learn the game, and you can get through that in a couple hours. So it doesn't have to be this 5-hour event. And so I think for me, it's just realizing that, hey, I don't have to play a full round. I can get out once a week. I can skip a lunch break, go to the driving range, things like that. I also try to like take advantage of the fact that I'm self-employed. I might not always be self-employed, right? I might not always have this kind of freedom. So when I can, I just try to enjoy. It's hard to do it on the weekends because that's like really when I try to lock out
time
for family and everything. Yeah. And passes from the wife to play 4 hours of golf on the weekends are rare. They happen. To her credit, they happen. But, you know, I just...
They don't come cheap.
Yeah, if I free up during the week, if there's a morning where I'm free in the week, I just try to take advantage of that.
All right. Well, I want to zoom out a little bit and ask two questions before I turn it over to you. Hindsight is 2020, so if you could go back, what major decision would you change and why? And maybe you wouldn't change anything, but maybe that's a role you wouldn't have taken or when you would have, or going back to school, leaving school.
Yeah, that's a good one. That one's going to be hard for me because there's really nothing that comes off the top of my head that I'm like, oh, I would just want to go back and redo that.
Well, I think... Nothing is a great answer if you can say it and you mean it, because even the negative things that happen to you in life, they turn you into who you are, right? Mm-hmm. How you react to them, what you learn from them. So if there's nothing that stands out,
this is not a significant one, but can I just say that this one, because it did come to mind, and I just didn't know. I didn't know any better. I was a freshman in high school. So for those of you listening right now, you cannot tell. I probably sound like I'm 6'3". I'm actually 5'3", right? So I don't have quite the height that you need to be a good basketball player. Albeit there was an NBA player, Muggsy Bogues. He was 5'3". He's like my hero, because I'm like, how did you play in the NBA at my height? So going to eighth grade to high school, you know, it's like time to do tryouts for the basketball team. I was a decent athlete, right? Like I wasn't the star, but I was good enough, I think. But at that time, I remember they did some workouts, some pre-conditioning stuff for the basketball team, and I would go periodically. I didn't kind of realize at the time that those are really where the coaches are testing you to some degree to see who's disciplined enough to show up to every workout. So the guys that showed up to every workout and then had a good tryout, you know, it's pretty much you're relatively kind of a shoe-in for the... Because, I mean, what coach doesn't want to coach a young kid that's 14 that has the... Like a good work.
Well, they've got a good work ethic and they got natural skills.
Exactly.
Whereas if you just have one or the other, then it's more of a judgment call.
Exactly. And so, yeah. And so for me, I had never really played at that level. I didn't, looking back, it's like, I really didn't realize like that all those were kind of, they were optional, right? But they weren't optional. So I would like periodically go and I would do the, you know, do some of the conditioning and then some of the shoot arounds. And then I tried out. I obviously didn't make the team. And then this one kid that was not as good as me made the team, but he was like, he was showing up. He was showing up, you know? And so that was just, it was like a light bulb. After that experience, it was like a light bulb went off in my head. I was kind of kicking myself that I didn't realize that. And it didn't take long for me to realize it, right? But, you know, I do think that in some degree has informed some of that Mamba mentality, right? If you want to use a basketball term, that took that lesson to kind of learn. And so I've always regretted not being able to play on the team. I think it would have been short-lived anyways, because I wasn't that good. I think I was good enough by like a hair.
But it would have been nice to have been picked, right?
Yeah, 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 for sure. But I did play other sports and stuff like that. But that's just one that I've always kind of been like, man, if I could go back, that's what I would do. But, you know, the real significant things in life, I think I've just been really blessed and really grateful how some of that's played out. And just where I'm at in life now with a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old and, you know, and my wife, it's just like, I do feel like, and even my work, right? Everything that I've chosen, the route of engineering, instead of going to like film school, instead of moving out to LA, staying in East Tennessee. I initially wanted to leave East Tennessee in high school. Like there really wasn't much happening. And now we have like such a cool little
city. It's a hip little town.
Yeah, it's a lot hipper than it was, right? It's and then to some degree you don't want to be like too cool for sure. You don't want to be so hip that it just annoys everybody. So I think we've got a good balance. Nowhere's perfect, but I'm thankful for where I'm at now. So it's hard to say like, oh, would I change any major thing in life, because it has all kind of led to where I'm at today. You know, I certainly want to continue to grow in life and mature in life and everything that I do in the future. That remains to be seen. But yeah, it's mostly just little things like the basketball team and stuff like that. That's like, man, I would have really liked to have had a better perspective at the time, being a young kid going through this.
So. Well, thank you. You've been very gracious with your time. Before we sign off, if you like, could you please tell us how we can find out more about you, how we find you, and if there's anything you'd like to share with our listeners? So maybe that's words of wisdom or specific causes that you want to make people aware of.
Well, yeah, thanks. Generally, you can look up Vessel Creative. That's spelled V-E-S-S-U-L. Or you can find me on social media. Mostly all my social media handles are just I'm Tyler Hayes. So it's I-M and then my name, Tyler Hayes. I'd love to connect. I've you know, made some really great connections. Met some really great people over social media and stuff. And so I've seen the power of that and sort of the power of being able to connect with people via social media. Yeah, that'd be great if people wanted to look that up. Kind of what's on my mind right now in terms of things. What did you mention? You mentioned like...
Well, if there was anything, any kind of like succinct words of wisdom that you wanted to just pass on or causes.
Causes, yeah. That's what the term was, causes. Yeah. So there's a cause I'm probably... I need to start up today or tomorrow morning. I'm training for a 20-mile hike in September. We're doing 5 summits through the Smoky Mountains. All kind of on our, me and 12 or 13 other men, all to kind of raise awareness for this organization called Rescue Freedom International. And they fight to eliminate human trafficking in like 19 different countries. I think more than 19 countries now. And then also look at people that they've been able to remove from things like sex trafficking and those kind of industries, ways to like restore them and kind of heal them from that trauma. They do some really great work. And I've been to... Thankfully, a lot of us, and probably some of you listening, hopefully we're removed from any direct connection from people that have been trafficked or anything like that. But I have been to countries where it's fairly common for a parent to sell their children for money, or in some instances they're sort of manipulated into thinking they're sending their kid off to work or boarding school or whatever it is, and so they do that just because they're not. That community isn't educated enough to not be manipulated, and so it can be a really, really common thing in some of these developing countries. And so this organization does a lot of, they have a great sustainable framework for helping these communities be self-sustaining and educate and that kind of thing. And so me and the other guys, we're doing this on our own. We're kind of self-funding it, but then we're all trying to each individually fundraise for Rescue Freedom International. And so, you know, I would welcome anyone listening now that seems like something they would want to support, that they would look up learn more about Rescue Freedom International. They're based out of Oregon, then we're doing a hike here that we're calling Appalachian Everest. We're all raising money. So if you you could donate to any one of the guys, it all goes 100% of the funds go to Rescue Freedom.
Okay.
And I did a first training hike the other day and I about died. So I was like, I don't think I'm going to make it. I've got to start training.
Well, September in East Tennessee, I mean, you should be dealing with really nice, cool temperatures in the high 90s.
yeah, no humidity or anything. So I'm going to, but again, it gives me something to work towards. I'm going to start, we did this training hike. I'm going to get on a sort of a training plan from here on out. We're fundraising for about another, 100-ish days, 90-something days right now. So I got a little bit of time, but it's going to be...
Get on the ball.
Five or six days a week, we're going to be getting at it. So, but it's because this is some meaningful stuff to us, and we think it's important work that they're doing, and we support it.
Well, thank you so much, Tyler. I hope you've enjoyed this as much as I have. And I hope this episode finds somebody out there at just the right time in their own life, where this really touches them and maybe will be influential in their life. Speaking of listeners, to you fine folks out there, the only thing I ask is that if you enjoyed this episode, if this chatter about the unique ways folks end up in the roles is interesting to you, please leave a review on whatever platform you're listening to. And if you feel so inclined, like us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We're a new podcast, so every bit of exposure really helps. Until next time, stay focused on your why.